all of this.
And here we are, another special edition of Common Ground election coverage. We're going to do a special release of this one, Sherry. Sherry Salas is in the house. I almost said Sherry Hallis. Is that crazy? Did your like grandfather play for the Bears or something?
No, and I'm just going to pretend like I didn't
George
know what that
Hallis.
Means. Right?
George Hallis, he owned the Bears. Come on.
Yeah.
The Bears. Okay.
If you say so.
But Sherry Salas is in the house, and we're releasing this broadcast on Monday.
Get it in before
24th.
Early voting ends.
We have a great guest with us today, Sarah Fox. She's running for judge. I'll let her tell you all about her. But we just want to tell our audience we did reach out to her opponents numerous times. And I won't even mention their names because it's not even fair to give them that much credibility. And they couldn't come here. We were actually taping here on a Sunday and was willing to work around everybody's schedule to get everybody in house.
We want as many candidates as possible.
But Sarah was grateful enough to come on the show, and she's with us today. And so I'd like to introduce Sarah Fox. Tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're running for this great position.
Hi there. Thanks for having me. My name is Sarah Fox. I'm a Plano resident with my almost six-year-old daughter, Vivian. And I am a board-certified criminal defense attorney. I started my career as a prosecutor for the Collin County District Attorney's Office. Worked there for almost 5 years and then have been in private practice ever since. And so I am running for the 401st because it is a court that is primarily criminal cases now, serious felony criminal cases. And with the retirement of Judge Rush, who is also board certified in criminal law, that leaves a gap for the type of experience to come in and be able to hear those serious cases. And since no one else with criminal experience is running, that's where I'm seeking to serve the community of Collin County now.
Wow, so it's interesting that none of your opponents have any criminal law experience, right?
None.
They were. What type of law did they have? Do they have civil, just civil, or?
Right. So,
Can you just, and quite honestly, if I could jump in, if
sure.
she could, if you could take a few minutes to educate the audience, because I don't think a lot of people, I didn't even get it until I had to start getting ready to do this show, and I find it all very interesting. If you could give like a short version for the audience.
Sure. So in Collin County, we have what are called general jurisdiction courts, which means they hear civil cases, family law cases, CPS cases, and criminal cases. And I'm running for a district court, which means it hears higher monetary value civil cases and felony criminal cases. So cases that can potentially involve prison time as opposed to just county jail time. As the county has grown, the state has created more specialized courts. Now we have courts that only hear family law cases, that only hear civil cases.
CPS.
And we have a juvenile specialized court. But we do not have any specialized criminal courts. So with the development of those new specialized courts, it's drawn those caseloads away from the general jurisdiction courts, leaving a higher percentage of criminal cases in the courts
that
are still
sense.
General jurisdiction.
See, I couldn't even figure that out myself doing the homework. I'm glad I asked you to do that. Oh, wow. So that's why they say that 70% of the cases are criminal.
Right. So prior, we had two new courts created October 1st of 2019. Prior to that, the 401st still had more than half of its caseload in criminal cases. But since those courts were created and those cases transferred, family law and civil law cases transferred out of the 401st, it's now 70% or greater percentage of criminal cases.
Wow. So what is the dollar value that, you know, what is it, $10,000?
No, I believe it's $100,000.
It's $100,000. So civil case is $100,000 and all the criminal cases would come in front of you.
Any criminal case that is a felony. So anything punishable by more than a year in jail.
Oh, wow. So what would you do? Is there maybe nothing, but what would you do that's different that's happened on the bench, you know, that this judge is retiring and that you would do differently than what he had done past?
So I think that Judge Rush has done a great job of handling his court, of running his docket. I think overall, being someone who practices in Collin County and I'm in the courtroom every single week in different courts up there, you can tell a difference between different courts and how strictly they run their docket versus how relaxed their docket is. And by that, I mean, how many times does an attorney get to pass a case, reset a case to continue to work on it? And one of the things that's been really effective as a practicing attorney is not even restricting how many times an attorney can reset a case, but requiring them to come in past a certain point and just touch base with the judge, right? It helps the judge kind of stay on top of what is a huge caseload and have his finger or her finger on the docket, and it also creates a sense of accountability with the attorneys. I know I personally, if I have to go in and ask for a continuance from a judge, I'm only doing it once, right? Because right. I might get that continuance, but it's embarrassing to come back and say that there's some other issue going on or whatever. And so I think just creating that accountability helps keep the docket more efficient.
Yeah, and I would think it's really important to have an understanding of the criminal law if you're going to be a judge in the criminal law system.
Okay, so I got to get in on all of this.
Of course you do.
From doing my homework, and I have this saying that I'll use, and dots don't connect for me. So there's a lot of love being thrown at the other two candidates from certain groups. Some of it really I don't understand, and maybe you can explain it to me. For example, the gentleman that's running against you, not only does he not have this experience you're talking about, but when I went to research him, like even the interview that some group of attorney, like some attorney label interviewed all of y'all and asked y'all questions, like even his answers were like not even half the length of yours and the other lady. And then during a debate forum also, just his content going back. And then I, you know, I stalk him online and it's like he's got all these endorsements, but I don't see a lot of literature. I want to know how that's possible. Explain to me, because I don't follow like the judge candidates until it's in front of me to vote myself.
Sure. So, I mean, to be blunt about it, I don't have the years of service to the Republican Party that my opponents have. And I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing, especially, you know, George Flint that's running, that I think you're referring
Who's
to.
Running?
George Flint, sorry.
I don't mind.
I mean, he is the prior GOP chairman, and he talks about that a lot. And I think that he's done wonderful things giving back to the party. You know, I have, like I said, an almost 6-year-old daughter. I've been building my law practice and raising my kids. So I have been giving back to my community, but I do that in the form of pro bono work, mentorship. I work with high school mock trial teams, and I mentor a girl out of Prosper High School. Like, I've been giving back in other ways.
Eagles.
But I don't have that connection to service in the party. And I think when it comes time in a short time period to vet and endorse candidates, there's candidates that the party knows and there's candidates that they don't know. And I was the unknown. And so I knew that coming in. I knew that was going to be a hurdle for me, that I was not going to have the political clout that either of my opponents had.
What do you think strategically, though? Because I also stalked the Democrat candidate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she has a lot of experience. Does she have criminal law experience?
She does not have criminal law experience. She did work for the Attorney General's office, which I guess you could market as quasi.
Her resume was really long. So strategically, is that ideal to have a person who doesn't have as much extensive? So were their experience kind of parallel then?
No, I would say, you know,
what I'm trying to ask is the blue team candidate going to be that much better for non-party identifying voters to maybe lean that way?
If I don't win the primary, I think so. Yes, I think that if we don't have someone with the requisite experience to speak specifically to this bench and what it requires, then I personally think that makes our party vulnerable in the general election. And I've attended one forum where our Democratic candidate was also there, and she's very well spoken. She's very confident. She has a lengthy resume, I believe, because she's jumped around a lot rather than tried to specialize in one area, which both of my opponents have been more specific in their legal focus. But again, to someone who is a nonpartisan voter, that might seem more attractive to them. And so that's why I think, again, having that specialization, especially a criminal specialization, when that's what this court calls for, I think that's going to make our party stronger in the general election.
And let me just jump in there. What was your basic drive then? You said that, you know, you're new to the party relatively and you've been practicing 6 or 7 years.
So this is actually my 10th year of practice.
Okay.
And I'm a lifelong Republican. I actually worked as a legislative aide for now Senator Brian Hughes. He was a state rep at the time when I was in college. I wasn't active in Collin County politics, and I've block walked in 16. I poll graded in 16 and 18.
Yeah, but if you're doing that in college.
Yeah, so I am a lifelong Republican, but again, for Collin County politics, I was an unknown. But you were asking about my drive or my ambition.
Compared to the other, did you come in last? Like, did you enter the race last? Are you one of the first? Did you enter first? How did that happen? Tell us about that.
So that's interesting. I actually announced first. I was pushed by several members of the bar, attorneys that practice in the courthouse, day in and day out to run when Judge Rush announced his retirement.
You want Sarah, that's what they said.
Well, I think they said, no, I don't think that was
necessary.
They
said it with that voice.
Yeah, they said the low voice. They said it with the low voice. I
had a lot of encouragement to run, and I'm a very faith-based woman, and I prayed a lot about it. My whole life has been about service. That's how my parents raised me. From a very young age, they told me whatever gifts God gives you, it is your responsibility to use those for the betterment of your community, which is why coming out of SMU with all that law school debt, I chose a job as a prosecutor instead of a big firm job. And then I've done a lot of pro bono work. Yes. Yeah.
Very good.
I've done a lot of pro bono work as a defense attorney. This just, when this opened up, this was not necessarily an ambition that I had at this point in my life. But when the need opened up and I was encouraged to run, I saw that as just the next opportunity in my career to serve my community in a different way with the gifts and experience that God gave me.
Go ahead.
So when you put all of y'all together and you go and you look at the endorsement list, it's definitely weighted. In your opinion, do you think that's party driven or do you think that's actual dedication? Like, I don't know all of those people mm-hmm. and it's not even my county, so I can't even vote for y'all. In your opinion, do you think that is party leaning or is it really also a level of just qualification and professionalism? Because there's a lot of judges and mayors and stuff that are endorsing other candidates.
Well, one candidate has some mayoral endorsements. No judges have endorsed because you can't endorse as a judge. And I would say I have a longer list of practicing trial attorneys than either of my opponents. The people who know what it takes to be a good judge or a bad judge have all endorsed me. Is it politically driven? Yes and no. I don't know that it's a bad thing that it's politically driven,
and
right?
You don't have to answer it because I don't want you to have to answer for those people. I am kind of like an outsider looking in.
Right.
And I was curious if there was something I didn't know.
No, I don't know the answer to that. I know that I was behind because I did not have the connections. I did not have the clout. And they have demonstrated, both of my opponents have not only demonstrated service to the party, but they have visibly demonstrated their conservative values, right? Whereas, again, I'm the unknown. So if political groups are looking for who's going to be the most conservative, how can we make sure that we keep this bench red, how can we make sure that those values are cemented in a candidate, it makes sense to go with a candidate that you have a history right. with and know those values. And so I'm not even saying that it's like somebody earned a political endorsement that I didn't earn, but you just didn't know me, and that's a really right. short amount of time to put your faith and my conservative values over someone you've known for years that's been giving back to the party.
That's a good answer. That's really
what do you what you know, qualifications, you mentioned some of them, which are really important, but are those the only ones that you would see make you a better candidate than your two opponents? That really stands out?
Sure. Besides the criminal law experience, which seems like the most obvious, there's two other things that make me a more qualified candidate. One, I have more actual jury trial experience than both of my opponents combined. And I've only been practicing.
Combined?
Yes.
Together.
Wow.
And I've only been practicing 10 years. What you're doing as a judge is you're calling balls and strikes in hearings and in trials and in bench trials. You need to have that experience in the courtroom to know how to govern the courtroom. And I have that uniquely heads and shoulders above my other two opponents. Second, I'm board certified, which is it means that you are an expert in a certain specialization of law. I'm board certified in criminal law, which less than 1% of attorneys in Texas are board certified. It's a very rigorous process. You have to have been practicing for a certain amount of time. You have to have had so many trials and different experience in different types of courts. I've practiced in appellate courts, federal courts, state courts. And then you have to have even recommendations from judges you've practiced in front of, opposing counsel from trial. I mean, it is an extreme vetting process before they even allow you to sit for the exam. The fact that I've done that outside of the specialization in criminal law, I think shows my commitment to always bettering myself and being as educated and as experienced in whatever I'm doing as I can. Neither of my opponents have ever even sought a board certification. And so outside of the specialization, I think that it says something about my drive in how I approach my career. And I've made the promise to the bar that if I'm elected, I'm going to seek a board certification in family law as well, because I think that it is equally important to make up for my lack of civil experience if I'm going to be making decisions that affect a child's future and their placement with parents or the division of monetary assets, that sort of thing. I want to be as educated and specialized as I possibly can be to make those decisions.
So what would you, you know, your opponents obviously are saying that they have been, you know, attributes that you don't have. What are some of the things that they're saying that you may lack, that they think that you lack, and how would you respond to that?
The only thing that I've heard them say is that I haven't been involved in the party.
That's it.
Yeah.
So you're, they so, don't well, question your legality, your experience in the legal system, or your criminal. Well,
so I will say this. George Flint has a couple of times made the argument that even though the numbers of the docket in the 401st says that it's at least 70% criminal, that the actual amount of courtroom time spent on a criminal matter, sorry, the 80% of the actual courtroom time is actually spent on civil matters. But he hasn't based it in anything. He says that he talked to a judge somewhere who said that that was true. When in reality, the sitting judge of the 401st, Mark Rush, has said publicly and repeatedly, no, the vast majority of his courtroom's time is spent on criminal matters. I also went and pulled the statistics from the Office of Court Administration in Austin for 2019, when it was still only 50% criminal, not even 70% criminal at that time. And it showed that not a single civil case was disposed of by a jury trial last year, but the court heard and disposed of 8 criminal jury trials. So the numbers even support the fact that—
I was going to say, doesn't that squash that?
Yes, or? It should.
So when this information comes out, then what do your opponents say? Well, I mean, you're throwing a lot of evidence out there.
Was that a pun?
Yeah, there you go.
Good job, Steve.
You're going to help fist pump. Well,
the forums that we've been at have been more like testimonial, I guess. We each have an opportunity to speak, and there's not a lot of rebuttal or debate.
That's
and
why,
so,
that's why you like,
yeah. Well, I know. I wish they were here, because I want to, you
it's
know.
It's a shame because Sarah's bringing up, hopefully Judge Fox is bringing up some amazing points that I would love to
crap,
question.
Steve, now you're going to have the audience making us biased.
I said, you know, maybe. I didn't say for sure.
Well,
I,
regardless, she's the one here. I'm just saying, people she's, like to
hey,
gripe.
She wants people to hear what she's all about, and that's important to our audience. People want to know. In fact, we're getting comments now about other races. Thank goodness you guys have it. I don't have time to go to these forums. It's the same people over and over again. I never know what to, you know, people have to tell me what to do. I can listen to your show and make my own decision.
Right.
So I'm glad that you're really here and telling people about what you can do and your experience, because that's really important. What type of judge would you be? I mean, everybody brings their own personality into the courtroom. So what could people expect if you're elected?
Well, I'll tell you this. It's been interesting as we tried to, you know, seek endorsements, and especially from practicing attorneys. And we asked them, you know, what would you say about me, or why do you think you would endorse me to be a judge? The defense bar still remembers me as being a very strict, hard-headed prosecutor, and the prosecutors all know me as being this bleeding heart defense attorney, which I think sums it up really well, which is that having been on both sides, I've prosecuted serious felony cases and I've defended serious felony cases, that it gives me this breadth of experience to help decipher between the small differentiations in cases, because you can have a 17-year-old charged with aggravated robbery, and it could be someone who deserves to go to prison because they're going to continue to be a danger to our society. They've been getting in trouble since they were 12, but this is their first adult case, but we know that they are a danger to Collin County. Or you could have a 17-year-old who needs to be on deferred probation because he hung out with the wrong kids for 6 months while his parents were getting divorced and he was acting out, right? Yeah. But he's somebody that we can rehabilitate and actually serve our community better by giving him the tools and the opportunity to become a productive member of society. And I think that if you don't have experience in the middle of these types of serious cases, you don't know how to decipher between those. I think that... also, having been a criminal defense attorney, I get lied to on the daily, which happens
no
when you're
way,
a judge.
I don't believe that.
I can't believe it.
But
people
when you're a judge,
themselves.
You know, no. You have to go in with a cynicism of sorts, but also a compassion. And I think that being a criminal defense attorney, I am very skeptical of what everybody says to me. But being a mother, I'm also very empathetic and very compassionate when it's warranted. And so I feel like I'm going to have a good balance from that respect.
I am dying to ask this, and I meant to ask it at the beginning of the show because I think it's very interesting.
Do you
want to
rebroadcast the whole show?
No.
Okay.
But, okay.
Go ahead.
Please explain to me, because when I heard it, I Googled the mess out of it, and it's very odd when I can't find the answer to something. What does constitutionally barred from running again mean? Because Mr. Flint apparently can't run a second term for some reason. That it's explain it, because I can't find. I even texted an attorney friend and said, what is this? He didn't know the answer, but yes. He's not.
Okay, so go ahead. The Texas Constitution says that due to his age, Mr. Flint cannot run a second term.
Oh, so there's an age limit to being a judge. Mm-hmm. And what is that?
I'm not sure at the time of running. It's either 74 at the time of running or 75 at the time of holding the office. I don't remember. We've all done the math. Mr. Flint has done the math.
He cannot run. How long is a term?
4 years.
So he can't run twice.
So if he wins.
Probably 72, give or take.
Well, I believe he's 70 now. Okay. 69, about to be 70, or just turned
70.
Oh,
maybe he can't start a second term.
He cannot start a second term. He cannot run for a second term.
I'm just curious about that strategically, since Collin County, wasn't it purple or blue last election?
It was getting pretty purple there.
Right. And yeah, so that's a concern, is that if we know that he has a forced retirement, then we don't.
What happens in 4 years?
Right. The Republicans don't have the benefit of even having that incumbent on the ticket in the general election in 4 years. And that's not to say that someone qualified and a strong candidate wouldn't run, but we do know that the Democrats are coming after Collin County by starting on those down ballot races, right? And the easiest way to do that, because that's what they did in Dallas, is by going after the judicial seats first, because that's what people know the least about.
Right, and it has a direct impact.
That's absolutely right.
And again, it goes back to the Democrat that is running. She has a pretty impressive resume. I mean, I don't speak judgeship.
Well,
so
if Sarah wins, we'll have them both on the show. Unless
you know that, right? We're going to circle back around.
All right.
Probably in October, right? Somewhere in there. I don't know. So we're going to take a hard break right now. We're about 50% through the show. And Sarah Fox, thank you so much for coming into our studio today. And we're going to talk about the sponsors who make this available out to the audience. So our first sponsor is Elevated Roofing. Have you heard Elevated Roofing at all?
I haven't. Okay. I don't have any roofing needs
there
yet.
There you go.
Good for you.
So they are the largest roofing contractor in North Dallas. And they go all over North Dallas. In fact, I knew they were doing a job in Irving or somewhere down there. So they really go all over the place. And they're a company that doesn't knock on your door when you have a hail damage. They're the ones who actually get referred. And they've been our sponsor since day one. They do a tremendous job. Services, everything for them. They help negotiate with your insurance carrier to make sure that everything's covered. In my house in particular, I mean, they ended up redoing my fencing and my gutters and painting. It was just crazy stuff that they did that was part of the insurance claim. So it was really good for us. They do a tremendous job, even follow up after, and, you know, Sherry likes the story about the magnets.
So I do think they should have a magnet as like a mascot or something.
Yeah, it'd be pretty cool. So after it was all done, they had these giant magnets on my lawn and my driveway pulling up all the nails.
Oh, okay. I like that. Yeah.
It was really good. So if anybody's looking for a roof, they have a problem with their gutters, roofing, painting, Elevated Roofing, please contact them at 469-200-0582. That's 469-200-0582. And I know Sherry loves Stuck by Bell and Sparrows.
I do. I love Bell and Sparrows. It is a faith-based charity group that helps reach out to ladies that are suffering from certain things, such as recovering from incarceration or drug addiction or abusive relationships. They go all over the world. They are local. They actually just worked with the Genesis group in Dallas. A lot of people know Genesis. See, look, Sarah knows what Genesis is. They work with them, and they just did like a meal prep or something. I can't remember the details. I don't have in front of me. But anyway, they're amazing. It's a faith-based organization founded by women for women. They have the Stella Project, which is helping ladies learn how to be sustainable by learning a trade. They have an opportunity for you to invite them into your home, and they'll do like what you would have, the old school Tupperware party or like Pampered Chef party, and they come in, but they help you lead your friends and your company, your guests, to helping their organization. And then on April 28th, they're going to have Birdies for Bells. It is their annual golf tournament. Team of four is $500 and a single is $150. It's a four-person scramble. It is at Canyon Creek Country Club. If you're going to be playing golf anyway, sign up.
Right. Bell and Sparrows. I mean,
there's cocktails.
And how do people find out about Bell and Sparrows?
You tell them, Steve.
Well, the best way is to go to their website at bellandsparrows.org. That's B-E-L-L-E and sparrows with an S.org. And you can find out how to help this great charity. In fact, their sponsorship is actually paid by an anonymous donor, so they don't have to spend any of their own funds to promote the charity. So please check out Bell and Sparrows. And lastly, I know that Valentine's Day is over, but our last sponsor, Bloomly.com, is the fastest growing florist in North Dallas, and they do special custom arrangements. So you could go to their website.
They're
and
pretty.
Pay. They're gorgeous.
I know. I've seen them.
This is not one here in the studio. This is actually fake. So don't think that's theirs. That's not theirs.
I'm glad we pointed that out.
Yes. Thank you. I don't want anybody to say, yeah, we saw that plant. No, that wasn't it. But they actually can work with you for custom design. So if you have a big occasion coming up, 28th anniversary, 15th, 10th, 5th, 1st, whatever, you can get a custom design. They do Cartier stores down in Highland Park. So if you ever go into the Cartier, I know I'm advertising for them, you will see Bloomly.com.
That's, oh, they need to send us a check now.
Yeah, that's true. I'll call them. It's BLOOMLY.com. Bloomly.com. Please take care of our sponsors, because without them, we would not have a show. So we are back with Sarah Fox. Thank you so much for coming in. And my co-host, Sherry Salas, is really welcome here. Anyway, you don't know what I just said, did you?
No.
Exactly. So we'll continue the conversation with Sarah. One of the things I had, I'm sure with all the criminality that goes on in this country, and especially in Collin County, there's some that you probably want to concentrate on more as far as delivering sentences, or how you would want to interpret it, because law is all interpretation, right? It's the words of the laws, you know, can be so, you know.
Well, it's not supposed to be as much interpretation as it is application to specific fact patterns, right? So different facts require different results, but we want to apply the law evenly.
Apply the law. Yeah. But so what three issues are you most concerned with, this, so you, what you see rising in the county, and how you would attack those type of, maybe attack's a bad word for it, how you would deliberate on certain types of those issues?
So there's a couple of things. First of all, you know, a lot of people in Collin County like to think that we don't have a lot of violent crime, and we don't actually have a lot of inherently violent crime. The greatest cause of death cases, murder cases in Collin County are actually drug related. So we have drug issues that people try to turn a blind eye to, and that's what causes our violent crime. And so again, that kind of comes with trying to intercede early, right? Finding the people that we can put into a drug intervention program, which we do have a drug intervention program through one of the courts in Collin County, and maybe try to get people back on track, versus the people who are dealing in large doses, who are really contributing to that lifestyle and that aspect of criminality in Collin County, and removing those people. Second, my advocacy my entire career, starting as a prosecutor and as a defense attorney, has been domestic violence. And Sherry, that's why I knew about Genesis. I've also done pro bono work for the Family Place in Dallas, and have taken on individual cases as well. And so Collin County has several different courts that have these intervention type court programs. We do have a drug and alcohol court. Judge Tucker also has a CPS specific drug court. Judge Roach has the veterans court program. So different judges have come in with their own personal advocacy and found a way to try and implement that as a way to intercede with certain people that can be rehabilitated. And domestic violence is no different. There are some men that are just going to be the types of men who manipulate and abuse and beat women. Then there are some men who don't have the tools to know how to react in different ways, how to
cope.
Right, exactly. And it is stress driven, wrong, but stress driven.
Right.
And there actually was a pretty successful felony court domestic violence intervention program run by Rick Magnus down in Dallas County. And so if I'm elected, that's something that I would want to continue to learn more about and see if there is a way that we could make that work for the 401st, and see if there's a way we can serve our community there. And then finally, you know, we always talk about jail crowding and overpopulation, and it costs the county a lot of money to hold people that are not that dangerous but can't afford bail. And one of the things, unfortunately, that I've watched in my career is the underutilization of bond hearings. So I'm sure most people don't know, when you're arrested, you see a magistrate and they just set a bond, and they don't know a whole lot about the case, right? They just set a bail, what is pretty standard based on your criminal history, you know.
You guys follow like a rubric, don't you?
Oh, well, I mean,
kind of.
there's a general schedule that people kind of follow. It's not strict, but yes, you just kind of know that this type of case with this type of history is going to get this sort of bond. And a lot of times those are not based on someone's ability to pay, right? And when I've had those cases, and then if I get them through court appointments or whatever, because usually if they can't afford a bond, they can't afford an attorney. So that's where you get them. There are some people that really could be successful and even working to, you know, mitigate the issues in their case if they're not being held in jail. And it's not really serving the taxpayers by paying for them to be in jail because they're not violent offenders. Those people, when I've taken the time to get members of their church, of their family, of their community to come in and put a plan in place and to tell the judge in a bond hearing, this is where they're going to live. This is what they're going to be doing. Let's take other measures like drug monitoring or a GPS monitor, ways that the judge can assure that the community is safe while this case is pending, but we're not spending money to keep them in jail. Those are largely successful.
I was going to say, and that when that's like a...
Not used a lot. A lot of attorneys don't do that. And I think a lot of the reason was because for it does not make economic sense to a lot of the attorneys that are court appointed to spend the time to do that. And so I think we need to encourage attorneys on the appointment wheel to use those bond hearings more. We need to incentivize them to use those bond hearings more. I don't know why they're underutilized, but they are severely underutilized. And that is something that can both assist the defendant while they are trying to proceed through their case. And it also helps the taxpayers save money. There are some people who need to be sitting in jail because they are dangerous while their case is pending. But plenty of people that we're paying for are not violent people that could be monitored on bond.
And you know, the one candidate we had on recently that was talking about how this was kind of an area for bail. Remember, you were like, oh, there's an issue with bail. And there really is. It's kind of like,
oh, right,
it kind of goes parallel to that.
Tell the audience about that.
I don't want to tell the audience right now that candidate for her. Like,
no, I know.
We need to let's keep them focused.
Are your opponents presenting any of these new items, or they just sit there and say, yeah, we like it as it is, and we're not really worried about the bonds, and we're not worried about the...
So I have not heard either of my opponents talk about bond issues specifically. Again, I think you talk about where your experience is, and you know, if you don't have experience working with...
You don't know what you don't know.
That's right. I have heard them both talk about efficiency of the courts, you know, and ways that they can improve efficiency. Again, I think some of that shows the lack of experience. So, for example, George Flint has said numerous times at forums he wants to implement an afternoon docket, add an extra docket in the afternoon, in addition to what we already have running in the mornings. But if you're a courtroom attorney, if you're a trial attorney, that doesn't leave you any time to actually practice law, because right now, I know for me personally, my Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday mornings from 9 to 12, I'm in court, right? And so then if you also make me come back and be in court Thursday afternoon and Friday afternoon, I don't have time to meet with my clients and to actually review discovery. Like, you have to be a practicing courtroom attorney to know what changes are actually effective for courtroom attorneys.
I wonder what some of those endorsement people that are in the legal system would say about that afternoon docket.
Well, unfortunately, endorsements usually...
I wish he was here to tell us.
Yeah, but endorsements are usually all political, and it really doesn't matter about your credentials. It's why they like you, what they think they're going to get down the line. That's typical. We're going to have a show on endorsements.
And we're going to have a show after all the elections on a lot of things about campaigns.
Well, and I just want to be clear that every political organization, inherently political organization, that endorsed George or Brooke or whoever gave me a fair opportunity, and I've really appreciated the opportunity to meet and share my message with everybody, including those people. I've been received warmly. So I knew that was going to be a hurdle for me going in. I'm not sour grapes about any of that.
No, you're not. I'm talking about me as someone looking in.
Yeah.
And I don't really have sour grapes. I just want to understand it because...
Sure.
But part of the reason, and I guess I haven't said this during the show, is when I was doing the research, I couldn't understand the disconnect of why a judge position is in the primary at all. Like, why is it a
partisan?
Well, some states
it's not.
I know. I found that out in my research. And then I started reading, like, was it Abbott that was doing a bill that was maybe contemplating not having, I don't know, somebody. I read one of our big elected officials had done a bill to try and do away with it or something. I don't remember all the details, but regardless, I find it interesting because then I go and I read for per the national, you know, for a judge's role, there's, I literally read this one line where it says they're not supposed to have political influence.
Right.
Right.
So I'm like, huh. Like,
I think from my perspective, so I agree. And I see that aspect of it. I'm sorry. But from my perspective, too, as a lifelong conservative, even if I am to lose this election, I want to support our Republican candidates because then I know what their intrinsic values are, right? And so I cannot legislate from the bench. I cannot interpret laws based on my conservative values, but I can let it affect my demeanor. I can let it affect, like, I like knowing that there's going to be a Christian conservative who's going to come in and want to do things like look at, you know, having extra bond hearings or efficiency of the court to protect taxpayer money, that's going to be mindful of the seriousness of every decision that they make. Like, I like knowing that someone with like values at their core, right, to me is going to be sitting on the bench, even though that can't influence directly their decisions.
Yeah, that totally makes sense.
And so, you know, I've seen in the news over the last few years, definitely in Denton County, I don't know, in Collin County, how CPS has this overreach type of situation where, how would you, you know, I guess from the bench, try and oversee that so people can feel more independent with their children, they're not mm-hmm. looking over their shoulder, you know, they come in for medical reasons, sure, or whatever. So what's your opinion on that?
Well, gosh, I can tell you from even interactions that I have, there's obviously overlap with CPS and criminal cases and CPS and family law cases. Yeah. And it's like any clash of powers. Everybody is out for what they believe to be the higher, most important value, you know, and it is hard to find a solution that doesn't disproportionately affect one party or the other. Fortunately, if I'm elected, I don't have to deal with it because there are no CPS cases in the 401st.
Oh, there you go.
So I don't have to have an opinion.
No, that's why they're criminal. CPS moved out.
Sorry about that.
No, but it's kind of a relevant question just because CPS is on the topic of a lot of voters right now.
No, I agree. And I even, as a, you know, doing, again, work in domestic violence advocacy, even as a prosecutor, there were numerous times where if I had a victim, and I mean a true victim, who then was too scared to prosecute and to participate in the trial process, CPS would threaten to take their kids because staying with him put her kids in danger. And that just re-victimizes
the complaining witness.
But at the same time, CPS is coming at it from a standpoint of, but we don't care what you've been through. Our job is to protect the children.
Right,
and so, again, I don't know what the right solution is. And luckily, I don't have to know what the right solution is.
Yeah, that's sticky.
So what values are most essential to you as a person? Like, if you had to list your top values so our audience can hear, you know, what's really important to you, if you could just name three values that are really important.
Obviously, my faith in God, I think, drives everything. It drives every decision that I make. It drives how I approach people and relationships. And stemming from that, empathy. I'm a person who believes in grace. To be able to work with people accused of very heinous crimes, some have done them and some haven't, you have to be able to find some redeeming quality in everybody that you meet. And that's a very important value to me, because I don't believe that there's anyone that is inherently irredeemable. And again, that doesn't mean that they don't need to be removed. You have to balance that. You have to find a balance between protecting society and also trying to be empathetic to where someone is coming from. But I think that approaching things with an air of grace and compassion when it's necessary, that's really important to me. And then the flip side of that being protecting society, not being afraid to make those tough decisions to put somebody away. I mean, I'm raising my daughter in Collin County. I read police reports for a living, which means I live in fear every day of the types of people that, you know, that she's encountering. And I live here because it is a much safer, more protected community. And I really value any role, whether it's as an attorney or as a judge, that I can play in keeping and maintaining that security that we enjoy here.
Yeah. So the other topic of, I'm sorry about the CPS part, but as far as I'm sure sex trafficking comes into your court. So would you be more very strong, you know, fist down to those people that are convicted with that type of crime?
So here's what's interesting right now in North Texas. And I've heard lots of people, especially from the AG's office and different advocacy groups, even in North Texas, that are really trying to raise awareness of sex trafficking as a problem, and also trying to implement measures that can, you know, retract or extract victims and get them to feel more comfortable prosecuting and that sort of thing. But to be honest with you, being in the practice of criminal law, there is a sex trafficking statute that we don't really use right now. And I don't know if it's because of a proof problem or what, but we tend to see those cases that would qualify as sex trafficking indicted as different types of crimes instead.
That's weird.
Yeah, very weird.
So I think that from that aspect, as a judge, for me to be able to enact any kind of sentence, I would have to be privy to some of the facts. And so much of that is dealt with through plea bargaining, right? So if it comes to me as a trial in front of the judge or what's called an open plea where you plead guilty but say, I don't believe I should have to have the sentence that the state is asking for, so I want the judge to make the sentence or that sort of thing, then absolutely. I think that that's something that needs to be cracked down on, especially when we're talking about sex trafficking as we see it pertaining to middle school and high school girls and the way that they are really falling victim to predators.
Yeah. They really are.
Especially at
just
the malls.
Vulnerable.
Yes.
Crazy.
Yeah.
You read about it every day.
Well, a lot of people don't realize they don't have to get snatched up. They're led.
That's
like,
right.
They're emotionally already a little broken, and the losers know that a mile away. That it's really sad.
So, you know, most judges do have reputations once they get into office. So if you were a sitting judge, you know, what would be the reputation that people would say about Sarah Fox?
You know, as a trial attorney, the biggest compliment a judge can have from an attorney is to be consistent. So when I have a client, I want to be able to say, okay, it's in X judge's court. This is what I think you can expect between this and this. They're always tough.
Yeah.
Or they're always, I want to be fair, but I want to be consistent. And I want to develop the type of reputation where attorneys can say to their clients, oh, well, you're in Judge Fox's court. So, you know, prepare yourself for X, Y, or Z, because good or bad, that makes the job a lot easier on the attorney to be able to kind of manage expectations from the outset.
Habits and kind of where they sit with things.
But on a more specific note, I hate to keep riding the fence, but I really do think it's important to bring that real world perspective of being able to not always be a stickler, be able to be compassionate when it is warranted, but not being afraid to be strict and heavy-handed from the bench when that is warranted and needed as well.
I'm glad you circled and said that again, because I know you said it earlier and I meant to ask something, but I was waiting to get it in. So, okay, let's say after the general and let's say you win. Well, not you, because you have experience. If someone who doesn't have experience, when does that job start? Is there a training process? Is there like...
No, it's on the job training. You're learning on the job. And I'm glad that you asked that, because one of the other things that really concerns me is the aspects of the job that take place after hours, right? So law enforcement are calling judges after hours to sign and review warrants.
Right.
Oh yeah, I watch Law and Order.
But not all of our judges currently do that because they don't have criminal experience. And so it's divided between a few of the judges right now that law enforcement know that in the middle of the night they can rely on, they can count on. And Judge Rush in the 401st has carried a lot of that burden.
So it's kind of like a doctor that's always on call.
Yes, you're always on call. Oh. Well, you don't have to be. That's the thing. If one of my opponents, they might be willing to do that, but they would have to hit this learning curve if they are willing to make themselves available to even know how to review a warrant, right? If probable cause is going to be upheld if it was challenged on appeal. And the example that I keep telling people at forums is, you know, when Officer David Sherrard was killed in Richardson in 2018, it was the judge of the 401st that's retiring, Mark Rush, that Plano PD called in the middle of the night to review those warrants, because it was an officer killed. So there was a good chance this was going to be the first death penalty case that Collin County had saw in over a decade. And death penalty cases are automatically appealed, no matter what, whether the defendant wants to or not. So every step in that investigation, from the very moment that police arrive on scene,
you
have to do it right. And so do you want someone who's never prosecuted a speeding ticket getting that call on January 2nd of 2021?
Not only that, could you imagine if somebody who killed a cop didn't...
Oh my gosh, forget about it.
Right?
Do you have any other questions for Sarah?
I'm sure I do.
But so, right that now, you want to have another show? Or, I mean, we're
in the
primary.
Wait, do we have to wrap up?
We're wrapping up.
I really do need to get on the clock, so I know. Like, I never know.
You have time to ask a question, Sherry. Go ahead.
Okay, so there was a particular law enforcement endorsement, a big one for one of the other candidates. Were you interviewed for that?
No. I have reached out to all of the police associations. I have a lot of support from individual law enforcement, especially because I actually have working relationships with police officers in Collin County. But no, I've never been given the opportunity to be interviewed
for. You were not vetted for that.
What's that? For I was the, not. No.
Wow.
Now, that, I find that interesting, considering criminal law experience. No,
I would
criminal.
Think a police group would want to interview every judge and vet every judge.
I know. Is that not the norm? Do they normally or what?
This is my first time running, so I don't know. But I have, I will say that they are associations. They're not the police agency.
Yeah, right. No. Yeah. And no, I'm glad sure. you said that. I didn't want to throw anybody particularly
no,
under
no.
the bus. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to say it, but
they're
it is.
Associations.
And
for sure.
You're right. I'm glad you cleared that up because I would hate for
She's
the audience.
A judge. Oh,
and I'm,
I'm glad she did because I should have worded it better, be more responsible.
So
I appreciate
what
that.
Is the last thing that I have? And this is
no,
your opportunity.
I'm done.
Okay. So last thing
Tap
I
out.
Have. She's done. Is there's been these things that I've been on social media that people are trying to paint you in from conservative groups to be a certain way, or that you were doing the
wrong I'm a rhino.
Thing. Right.
That's what they say.
The
yeah.
rhino, and then you know you don't act quote unquote conservative. And so how would you respond, since you have the mic, to address some of the things that are, you know, you call them rumors, whatever you want to call them, out on social media about yourself?
Yeah, so there a couple of things. First of all, I am a lifelong conservative. I mentioned, you know, how I started in college, but actually when I was in third grade, my parents gave me a book called The Big Book of Why, and it had these, like, it broke down questions that, like, elementary school kids have about big things adults talk about. And one of them was describing the difference between Republicans and Democrats.
Oh, wow.
And I remember reading about what they do with your
That's
money. And I was like,
grade?
Nope, I'm a third grade. I'm like, nope, I'm a Republican.
I want
my
money.
Money.
I want to keep my money. And she is wearing red, as everybody can see.
Yeah, the things that came out on social media specifically had to do with me not supporting President Trump during the primary. And then they were, of course, extrapolated, and which half of this county did not support President Trump in the
That's
primary.
True.
They were extrapolated.
More
and
Cruz. If you
right, yes,
that.
Right, yes.
You almost lost.
And okay. So that's been extrapolated and misused and altered. And I'll be really honest, I'm glad for the platform, because no one has had the nerve to actually ask me about it. They just want to talk about it on social media.
That's
and at
what
these
we're
forums,
here for,
oh, well,
no one has given me the opportunity.
That's how our show has been born. That's that kind of stuff.
Well, I will tell you that those close to me know that back in the fall, there was a person who's involved with Collin County GOP who wanted to be a part of my campaign team and pushed really hard to try and be a part of that team and made lots of unwanted sexual advances towards me.
Oh, my gosh.
And I turned this person down repeatedly. I received
that
messages from this
me.
Person, people this person knew, telling me be careful because he's
That's
very well connected.
Terrible.
And I eventually released him from any negotiations with my team. He went and dug those things up and spread them and gave them to team members of one of my opponents. So that was not only was it taken out of context and misused against me, but the intention behind it, the you know what
well,
precipitated
talk about
it
red
is
flags.
Yeah. So, but again, like I said, I'm I am a Christian woman, and I just stayed faithful about it the whole time. And if this is not where God wants me to be, it's going to take a lot more than some, you know, misused Facebook post from 5 years ago
right.
to take me down. And if this is not where God wants me to be, I'm going to lose for other reasons, and that's okay. But if this is where God wants me to be, I don't need to go to
That's
war
a
with anybody.
Straight up answer.
Well, I hope
know
a lot of people hear
that.
This, you know, this broadcast, because they'll get to see the real sense of who you are and what you stand for. And that's really important. So I'll give you a couple minutes or a minute or so just to tell us again who you are, why you're running, and where people can find more information about you.
Great. Thank you. Yeah. So you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/SarahFoxForJudge or on my website at SarahFoxForJudge.com. I really appreciate you guys giving me the platform to be here. I am doing this again out of service. And so I believe that the career that I've had to this point uniquely qualifies me to be the best candidate for this job and for this bench. But if on March 3rd I lose, there's no mourning period for me on March 4th. I have a wonderful law practice. I feel very blessed to wake up every day and feel like I'm fulfilling the purpose that God created me for in what I do in my career. And I have a beautiful family with my daughter. So there's no malice towards anybody in the race. We've run a fairly clean race, and I've appreciated the opportunity to get re-involved and re-engaged with the Collin County GOP. I've met some wonderful people through that. but I would appreciate everybody's support because, again, I think that this is a very serious role and I'm the only one with the serious qualifications to fill that role. So I ask for everybody's support on March 3rd.
And where can they find out more about you?
Right. At facebook.com/SarahFoxForJudge or SarahFoxForJudge.com.
And what are the boundaries for your, you know, your magistrate? Where, what does it cover?
It's all of Collin County. It's a county-wide
wow,
race.
What
yes.
a race.
And while you're voting, if you're early voting, you do not have to vote in your precinct. You can early vote at any location in the county.
Well, good luck to you, Sarah Fox.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you for your your opponents weren't here. So people, really, you should really take that seriously. We did reach out to Sarah's opponents many, many times to come on this broadcast and give their opinion as well. They decided that they didn't need to. Sarah thought it was really important to come on the show. We appreciate that. And until next time, for Sherry Sauce, myself, Steve Noskin, have a great day. I hope you enjoyed this special broadcast of Common Ground, and we'll see you soon. God bless.